I'm Stephanie Wilson, and you're listening to Freedom Over Fascism.
Right now, it's do or die. And I'm very honest with people about that, too. These people are playing games with our lives and our friends' lives. We can't just sit around. It's not enough to be an ally. You have to be a co-conspirator, which means taking action, showing up to the polls, and not just that, but talking about it, making sure that friends and family and even strangers, sometimes I talk loud enough in public spaces, hoping that the other people around me will hear me.
Hi, friends. Today we'll hear from Chelsea McDonnell, an activist from Muncie, Indiana. She co-founded Mad Voters, an advocacy and community organizing group that stands for mutually assured democracy. Our conversation goes way beyond what Indiana and other MAGA captured states need to do to reclaim democracy. Chelsea's calling is to care about and advocate for people, particularly those on the margins of society. Her view is holistic. She registers voters. She educates people on how to vote, where to vote, and the candidates who are running. But she goes beyond the purely political to what we all know politics is at its best. And that is the whole individual, not just the voter. What does that mean? It means understanding what voter suppression really means, which is the suppression of the hope that life can actually get better. It means understanding generational change from its fundamentals, breaking what she calls generational curses, and raising kids with more empathy and kindness, which she sees as creating a younger generation that is kinder and more resilient in ways that their parents and grandparents may not be. And it also means understanding poverty in deeply personal ways and advocating for change in deeply personal arenas. One of her current focuses is on alleviating period poverty. What is period poverty? It's that girls and women in poverty often don't have the means to buy period products, which are quite expensive. In fact, 1 in 4 Hoosiers who menstruate have trouble accessing feminine hygiene products. Girls are getting their periods as young as 8 years old and often don't have anyone around who can teach them how to deal with it. And period poverty includes the shame surrounding the lack of access to period products. I can attest that for young girls, having a period feels somehow shameful, and for those who don't have access to products to manage it, it can lead to deeply embarrassing situations that have lifelong emotional reverberations. So Chelsea and Mad Voters, along with other organizations, have organized Period Action Day, the initials read PAD, at the Indiana State House on October 18th. At this event, organizations are lobbying for the elimination of sales tax on period products, which amounts to $5.4 million a year in Indiana, which is one of only 21 states that taxes feminine hygiene products. And they're also collecting donations of period products and inviting people in need to come and take some. You'll hear more about this event and can check out details at madvoters.org. What struck me most was how Chelsea and many others like her view advocacy holistically. They think about poverty, period poverty, and the lack of quality healthcare for people who get periods. They think about how abortion bans mean even fewer high-quality OBGYNs in states like Indiana. They think about whether people can access or afford healthcare. And they think about what kind of healthcare is available to people, either because of whether they can afford it or whether the government has banned appropriate and necessary healthcare. They think about kids being able to access books in which they're represented, or where they can learn about people different from them, and also what kids are learning in public education and how that affects their lives as citizens. For Chelsea and her co-conspirators, advocacy is about everything that politics means, which means advocacy is about every aspect of life that government touches. I couldn't be more inspired by Chelsea McDonnell. And I hope you find something in her story and in her activities that inspires you to action. Again, you can reach Mad Voters at madvoters.org and by email at madvoters@gmail.com. Before we start our conversation, I want to remind you that you can get early access to podcasts, bonus content, and backstage glimpses by becoming a patron and helping me feed my family. www.patreon.com/freedomoverfascism. Now for our conversation. Hi, Chelsea. Welcome to Freedom Over Fascism.
Hi. Always nice seeing you.
Can you start by introducing yourself to our listeners so they know who you are and what you do in Indiana?
Absolutely. My name is Chelsea McDonald. She, her pronouns, please. I am one of the co-founders of Mad Voters Indiana. We are a social advocacy organization here in Indiana, focus a lot on legislative education and just getting information to people. Another thing about me is that I am a personal private baker. I have five children ranging from 19 to 3. So I am very, very busy, but I wouldn't want to be doing anything else.
Well, you know, I've known you now for a little while, and it's absolutely astounding to me how much you do and how beautiful your baking is and how effective you are. So can you tell me a little bit about what was the impetus behind starting Mad Voters?
Absolutely. And, you know, I'll start with, I think that I've been blessed with a very special perspective. My experiences growing up have allowed me to be very empathetic and capable of thinking critically. I was in and out of women's shelters a lot of my childhood. And so very unstable household, moved often, switched schools often, didn't really ever fit in. But by being on the outside a little bit, I was able to see things more clearly. See how people acted with each other, how people reacted to each other. And, you know, I've always been a people watcher. As a child, I was quiet. I watched. And like I said, it's really given me a very special perspective. And being able to see the things that I've seen, especially in the women's shelters, really taught me a lot about equality and equity. I was around Black women all the time. And my mother would make efforts to help them with resumes and job applications and things like that because my mother understood her privilege. And I'm very grateful that I was able to learn that from her at a very young age because it has helped me in my life just be able to make connections with people that I otherwise wouldn't be able to do, I think. So those experiences and that outlook is really what brought me into what I do. And I've always been a very big community advocate. Anywhere that I have lived, I have tried to volunteer, feed my neighbors, do whatever I can, because I understand that other people's lived experience is not like my own. And those people who do have lived experiences like mine, they need that help and they deserve that help. So it's always been a part of me. I was never super duper political. You know, I have my opinions and my opinions tend to run on taking care of people. And so, you know, people call me a socialist, whatever. That doesn't really matter to me. My allegiance is to the people, not to a party. So because of that, I was able to get into politics in a way that is still very helpful to people. And that is through Mad Voters. We, as I said before, are a social advocacy organization. The most important thing to us is education. A lot of people don't understand how the legislative process works. They don't understand their rights, how to vote even. And we want to bridge that gap. And we understand that rather than putting our information out there and thinking people are just going to happen upon it or find it, we try to bring it to people as much as we can. You have to meet people where they are, especially with legislative and political stuff, because especially in Indiana, the disenfranchisement is absolutely wild. And talking to people about voting is really hard sometimes. Sometimes you even get harsh reactions from people, which is hard, but you have to try to meet them where they are and understand why they feel the way that they do. And when you step back and you look at that, you really, really can understand why they would feel that way.
Can you give me an example of somebody having a strong reaction? What does that look like? And then how do you
Well, I will say before the fall of Roe, speaking to younger people about voting was very hard because they don't trust the government. They don't trust authority when authority is trying to push certain things down their throat at every turn. And so yeah, the idea of voting, because they don't understand. They don't see yet the hand that we've been dealt. You know, they have this hope that if they just ignore the government, they're not going to have to deal with it. And I get that because, you know, gosh, we have so many things that we need to work on in our government. But again, you have to meet them where they are and explain to them why this is important. You know, I always tell people we have been dealt a certain hand and we can choose to play it and make progress if we try, or we can ignore it and we do nothing and it helps nothing. And I try to give them hope by telling them if we play the game long enough, if we get the right people into office and we use our voices and make things happen, you know, get amendments made and things change, then we don't have to play the game so hard anymore. Because we're taken care of. We have made sure that we're covered with health care and with support. Then we don't have to play that hard game. But right now it's do or die. And I'm very honest with people about that too. These people are playing games with our lives and our friends' lives. We can't just sit around. It's not enough to be an ally. You have to be a co-conspirator, which means taking action. Showing up to the polls and not just that, but talking about it, making sure that friends and family and even strangers, sometimes I talk loud enough in public spaces, hoping that the other people around me will hear me. And sometimes they do. And sometimes they'll come over and they'll be like, listen, I overheard you. And they want to talk about it. And they might already know everything that I was talking about, or I might be able to teach them something. And hopefully they'll teach somebody else something. I love outreach. So I am talking to people face to face as much as possible, going to events, just taking every opportunity that I can to talk to people. And it doesn't matter who you are. I'm going to try to talk to you. And so that is my favorite part of it because being able to talk to somebody face to face, you can see how they're reacting and you can adjust. Because this is about reaching people and helping them understand. We can't let their feelings turn us away. We have an obligation. We just show up to events. I think our volunteers were almost at every single Pride this year in Indiana, and we had the most amazing experiences.
That's awesome. So, can you tell me a little bit about the experiences at Pride?
This is the first time ever that I have been able to look at young people and say, hey, are you registered to vote? And they'll look at me and they're like, well, of course I am. I've never had that happen before, ever. And now all of a sudden, I mean, at all these prides, it happened. Like they were almost offended that I would think that they were not registered to vote. And even the ones that were too young, they were like, oh, I'm too young now. But yeah, when I'm 18 and, you know, and then you're like, well, if you turn 18 in that same year, you know, you can still register. And so then you get that information in. But these young people are reacting completely different now. And they want to protect each other. They understand that their lives are on the line, that their friends are committing suicide at alarming rates. They don't want to hurt anymore, and they don't want to see people hurt. We have a generation of kind children. They are going through some crazy, crazy stuff that we've left for them to clean up, but they are so kind. And they're ready. They're ready to take action. And I can feel that from them this year. So Pride this year was just, I mean, for me, a very proud moment as well, because it really shows that people are paying attention and they're listening.
Do you feel that at Prides that there were allies and co-conspirators as well as people from the LGBTQ community, or is it still a little bit separate?
No, it is. Both sides are coming extremely hard right now. And you see that in even the vendors, because we make it a point to go and introduce ourselves to everybody, find out any things that they're doing charity-wise that we can push out there to our followers, because this is all about lifting each other. And so even in introducing ourselves to these people, all of them are so excited to hear more about it because they're invested in what's happening in legislation, because they want to protect people. And people were talking about all the things that they're doing, like, I'm having bake sales and I'm doing sales and I'm donating to the Trevor Project or to a human rights campaign. And, you've got a lot of parents showing up, just going all out for their kids. I mean, head to toe rainbow. Like, I'm here, sweetie. We're good. It's great to see. And we've met a lot of teachers and librarians this year at Pride, and they want to talk about queer books. They're
Oh
sick
my
and
gosh, that's
tired of their queer literature being taken. They have queer kids in their classes and in their programs. They know this. They want to protect them, and this is so important to them. So even like this book banning thing is really coming out at Pride, because people are showing up and they're saying, I want you to have representation. And that is really what's going to keep these kids going. So I was really happy to see it.
That's incredible. I actually did not expect this conversation to go here. And so that it did, it's is fantastic. And I love the way that you describe this generation as being so kind, because I see that too. And I think a lot of people our age still fall into the, oh, those kids, they're, those are punks, whatever. But they're not. They've had some really, really harsh challenges, particularly with COVID and being out of school. And they, not all of them, obviously, but a lot of them have come out the other side with more empathy and kindness than you might expect from.
Absolutely. I also think a part of that is the generation before them, like the generation that's raising them. And even speaking specifically of me, I feel we turned the tables and we broke generational curses and raised children with much, much more empathy. And I truly believe that because I see my friends doing that and I see their kids and I'm just like, these are wonderful kids, vibrant kids, different than we were because of the generational curses that we were still under. Things haven't always been easy in America, and that has really shown in each of the generational curses we've had to deal with. And I really do believe that these last couple generations are really taking strides to break those and raise children who want to see better for the world and for Mother Earth. We have God, these kids care so much about the climate, so much. And it's amazing to see it. And we have to do our part to support them in that.
Right. Well, they're going to live in it far longer than we will. I'm curious, what do you see as the generational curses? How do you define that?
Well, let's look at women right now. There's always been this societal expectation of they take care of the home and they take care of the children. And so that's a part of it. That's a part of it. Women are not settling down. They're not having children. They're not putting themselves in these positions because society tells them to. And it's the same for men. And I mean, that is a lot of it, is breaking away from the societal norms that our parents pushed on us. I'll say for me, example, it was just a whole line of house perfection. The house needs to be nice and clean, and in case guests stop by. And like, I was able to slowly break out of that, and that changed my life. And I think a lot of people are doing that and are making steps like I am in a lot of different ways. A lot of abuse, I would say. I think a lot of the past generations were spanked and things like that. And that is changing. We're seeing more gentle parenting and we're seeing the effects of that and how great that is. And so people are like, oh, well, yeah, duh. We shouldn't hit a human whose brain hasn't developed. Oh, wait, we shouldn't hit humans. And it's people are, they're like, yeah, my parents shouldn't have hit me. And therapy is becoming more normalized. And that in itself can change people's lives. And especially men who struggle so hard to put themselves through therapy, they really got to take this chance. And a lot of them have. And it's changed how men are reacting to things, because you shouldn't be reacting to things with anger or with any reaction within your body to, you know, that needs to be fixed. And that is a generational curse that was given to you. You have the opportunity to fix that. So you just have to take it. And we have to understand why people don't and help them to see why they can.
So you really view this as a holistic, you know, there's mad voters, and that's all about educating people and showing how important the laws are to their lives. But then I hear you talking about all of this surround, which is the human part of being human and changing our lives. And I find that very inspiring. Can you tell me about this project that you're working on right now, which goes to the human side of being human? Can you explain what period poverty is in case people don't know?
It's probably not a surprise to anybody that we have some insane poverty rates in Indiana. It is Gary and where I'm from, Muncie, specifically, very, very high levels of poverty. And period poverty is a part of that. One in four Hoosiers have trouble accessing feminine hygiene products. And we're talking pads, tampons, anything that somebody needs for menstruation. That's a problem. These are vital necessities. People with a uterus cannot stop themselves from bleeding. We can't. And I'm going to say this, let's be honest. Every single person you know is here because of a period. Someone had to menstruate for you to be born. We have to take care of the people who do that. It's not fair. It has always kind of blown my mind that people don't see it this way, that they don't see this as a complete necessity. To me, they should be free. I mean, we have girls as young as 8 years old starting their periods. They deserve access. And not only is it financially hard for people, but you bring in the shame that periods and society places on those who have periods. It is a complete recipe for disaster for women and girls and other people with uteruses. And I can speak from my own experience growing up with back and forth in women's shelters, not having a lot of money. And my mom worked all the time. I didn't have any females to really help me. And so when I started my period, we didn't really have anything. My mom had a couple of tampons. I had no idea what to do. And I was terrified. I didn't want to talk to my mom about it. And I ended up taking toilet paper and putting it in my underwear because I had no idea what else to do. I ended up bleeding through my pants at school. And it was one of the most embarrassing things that I can remember from my childhood. And there were some kids that made fun of me, and there were some kids that were able to take me aside and let me know what happened. And I appreciate them so much even to this day. And the nurse was not much better when it came to this. It felt almost like somebody else should have been helping me. And that's just not the case for many, many children. Mm-hmm. Many children do not have the support that they need at home. And so those of us on the outside of that need to be mindful of that at all times. I try to leave tampons in bathrooms, public bathrooms, when I have them, because not only is it hard to get them, but then the shame. Nobody wants to ask for these products. Girls are embarrassed to talk to people about it. We have to change the conversation as a whole. We have to make people understand that this is not a dirty thing. This needs to be talked about and celebrated for what it is.
Can you tell me about the Period Project?
Absolutely. And I'll start with saying that as an organization, one of our goals was always to push for legislation to remove sales tax and just obstacles to getting feminine care in general, whether that is through hygiene products or medical care, reproductive care. That is a huge goal of our organization, is to try to influence change in those places. So when we were contacted by some national organizations, Period Law and Period, we were ecstatic. They told us we want to really focus our efforts in a few key states this year to try to work towards that legislation. And we were like, yes, absolutely. Like, we are your team. We've got this. And it, first of all, has been an amazing experience and a very educational one. It's, you know, we're learning more about period poverty across the country. And, you know, our focus is Indiana. So we've put together an event. It's going to be at the State House on October 18th, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. We have an amazing lineup of speakers. Senator Shelley Yoder, in particular, she's the senator from Bloomington, very, very progressive liberal area and a very progressive senator. She's one of a kind. And she has pushed for this legislation in the past, and it is really, really important to her. And it is very important to her to focus on the inclusivity of this and making sure that people are taken care of. So she's going to be one of our speakers. The amazing, inspiring Representative Sue Arrington, which I am very proud to say that she is my representative, one of my personal sheroes, somebody who has worked for women's rights for a long, long time. She's going to be speaking. We have Professor Sarah LeBlanc from Purdue, who is actually a professor who works specifically within period poverty. This is something that she learns, that she teaches, and we're really excited to hear what she has to say and share with us. And Jennifer McCormick is going to be with us. She is the hopefully Democratic candidate for governor in Indiana this coming year. And we're really excited to have her. And then Period Law is actually sending one of their law students from NYU out to join this as well, which we are so excited about because this is going to help us and the other people there learn more about the laws and those specifics. And, you know, it's always nice to have somebody to explain that because it's hard to break down laws sometimes. The language is, it's hard to understand. So we're really excited about that. We're going to have activities. We are even challenging our legislators to come and try on a period cramp simulator machine.
Oh my gosh. Such a thing exists.
We have emailed all of them several times and we're saying we are going to be there. Come, we've got waivers. Let's see how you do.
I'm curious because
we're excited to see if anybody will step up to the plate on that one. But we've got other games, we have prizes, and we're even going to be providing a light lunch. So we welcome everybody. People are going to be bringing period products to donate. We are saying if you need them, please come. Please come and take what you need. We're also requesting receipts, and we have somebody there from Period Law who's going to help go over forms and everything with everybody. We're going to try and get people to help us fill these forms out, get these done, because our plan with that is we're going to take the receipts from all of these period products that we have purchased to help make a dent in Indiana's period poverty, and we're going to submit them as sales tax refunds. And we're just going to kind of clog up the system a little bit in a protest. This is important to us. We need you to pay attention. Legislation has been brought forward to eliminate sales tax on these things multiple times and has bipartisan support in the State House. But no one's ever done this before. No one's ever come together in the State House for a rally, education, and doing this with the tax system. So we really feel like this is a great opportunity for people to step up and say, this is really important to us, and this will help with equity in Indiana.
That's really amazing. I love how you're coming at it from so many different directions, from the law to the way it actually feels to, you know, having a law student come. I think that is fantastic.
I mean, we're creating life here. That in itself is amazing. Periods are what they are. There's
Right.
nothing we can do about it except support it better.
Well, I think as a society, we put shame around everything having to do with women. I mean, I learned when I had a miscarriage that 1 in 4 people have miscarriages. I hadn't met anybody, or so I thought, who had had a miscarriage. And then I started talking about it, and, you know, my mother-in-law and like almost everybody I knew had had one. And I thought, what? Why aren't we talking about this? And then menopause. Nobody talks about menopause. And it's just as big a deal to a female body as, or to a female assigned at birth, as puberty. I mean, it's that big a change. Does anybody talk about it? No. And you know, that combination of shame and taboo and
misinformation, lack of education. Because I mean, when I think back at school, nobody told me that pregnancy was dangerous or hard. It was just all fuzzy bunnies and rainbows and balloons and yay, a baby. No one told me that my blood pressure would go up so fast it would almost kill me. No one told me that I'd hemorrhage after one of my children. You know, nobody tells women you might get rushed into a room and cut open. They didn't even tell us that. And so it's this huge lack of education surrounding a woman's body and what it is supposed to do and what's normal.
And what's not normal, and not like, and the fact that they don't believe women when they talk about their pain.
Right. Yeah, come get hooked up to our period machine, please. Let me just warn you. I don't know if you really think you know, it's not what you think at all.
I want to hear what happens. I was one of those people who had immense, immense, immense pain every month. And, you know, the answers I got from my mother and her friends were, well, suck it up, Buttercup. You're going to have 40 more years of this.
Mm-hmm.
Which also, hopefully that's a generational curse we can also break.
We need to break it with the doctors as well, though, because
yes.
we still have doctors that are requiring women to have their husbands sign papers if they want to get their tubes tied. And, you know, women have to think about it for a couple weeks before they'll go forward with stuff. Or, you know, I was told at one point that I am still capable of having babies. So, you know, he's not going to do it right now. And it's like, well, but I've had all the babies I want. And that's still a big problem. So we need doctors who are thinking in these old school, just completely inappropriate ways to retire.
Right.
Let some nice, new, young, fresh medical minds come into the field. And let's get the legislators to back the hell off of them so they can do their jobs.
Right.
That's what we need.
And to bring that full circle again, when these laws, you know, the abortion bans, as we talked about with Dr. Katie McHugh, the downstream effects are that medical schools in Indiana are not training OBGYNs because they can't teach them the full spectrum of care. So that means a third of the counties don't have OBGYN care in Indiana. It's all
connected.
But
no one's going to move here. No one's going to move here to do OBGYN work unless it's somebody who, you know, really understands the problem and is willing to put themselves at risk.
Right.
Literally, that's what we're asking them to do in Indiana. So, yeah, I mean, this is absolutely terrifying, and not just for pregnant people, but for anybody with a uterus. I mean, we are strong. And, you know, even those of us who are no longer women, we are strong, and we're stronger together. And we all need to realize that and really come together and help fix and solve period poverty and then poverty in general. And what we're doing right now at the State House with trying to eliminate this sales tax, I know it's not going to fix period poverty. We are very aware of that, but this is the first step in the right direction. We can make this happen. And then from there, as long as we keep pushing and we keep working, we can make so much more happen. Let's make sure that these things are free for people. Let's make sure that our schools and our colleges are stocked up because it is hard to afford this stuff when you're going off to college, especially when you're putting yourself through college. We have to make sure that people are taken care of, especially these young people, because they are our future. They have to be taken care of, or we don't have a future.
Well, Chelsea, thank you so much for coming on the show. And I think that everything you've said is something that we all need to pay very close attention to, because you're right on so many fronts and you're so inspiring for so many people. I hope everyone listens so that they can get inspired too and be moved to action. Can you tell people how they can reach Mad Voters and how they can get more information about the event at the State House?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are, like I said, across social media. Just, you can search for Mad Voters Indiana, and you will find us. And we welcome you to follow us because we share as much information as possible, making sure that you're up to date on changing laws and legislation. But you can also find us at madvoters.org. That is our website. We try to put up as much information as we can. We're always working on our website, making sure that it's easy for people to understand. So if you ever have anything to mention about that, another way to contact us is through our email, which is madvoters@gmail.com. You can message us about anything. If you want to know who your candidates are, we're going to help you with that. You can sign up for our newsletter. You just shoot us an email and we'll get you on that. We send it out every Sunday, keeping you up to date on important events and important changes, making sure that you're registered to vote, which you can early vote now. So please do that. And, you know, just reach out anytime. Like, we are always, always, always happy to talk to people. And if you end up getting me on the other end, I'm probably going to talk a lot. So just reach out. We're here for you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate this. And I agree with you. I really hope that somebody, at least somebody, will listen and will get inspired to take more action. It's time to be a co-conspirator.
Thank you for listening to Freedom Over Fascism. Kudos to our editor, Benji Wilson. Please join our Patreon at patreon.com/freedomoverfascism. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts, and please drop us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts.